Hello and welcome to Rewatchable 44 for Veronica Mars. Today we're discussing episodes 11, Poughkeepsie, Tramps and Thieves, and 12, There's Gotta Be a Morning After Pill. I'm Danielle, and with me is Caitlin and Merrima. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are we feeling? Pretty good, I hope.
Pretty good, yeah.
Good. Very good. Before we jump in, I want to say first to Merrima, I am very sorry about the dean, about your loss.
Oh my god!
I am very, very sorry.
What is this shit doing to me?
I don't know.
Like, every single one of the characters that I like is just dead. It's so upsetting. I feel worried about Piz, except, like, I am aware that he's in the film. So, I mean, I think he'll be okay. But, like, really? I can't deal with this. I was so sad when that happened and very surprised, but mainly just devastated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough life.
It was immediately after we recorded our last episode where you're talking about how awesome he was. And then, like, the next one, he dies.
Yeah, I know. It was very upsetting.
So, I'm sorry.
I'm still working through the mourning process. So, bear with me, guys.
So are you going to be super into finding out who did it? Because he was one of your favorites?
Yeah, well, he's like the only character I like in this season so far. So
fair
enough. A good start. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump right into episode 11. Again, that one's Poughkeepsie, Tramps, and Thieves. And Mitch actually did the synopsis for us today. It was very nice of him. And so he said he was trying to channel his inner Ariana, so let's see how this works out. In this episode, Veronica helps the cheat sheet selling Max, who's searching for his Comic-Con Juliet before she's wed. Veronica sleuths out that the wedding text was sent out from a New Yorker first student's phone by Max's hooker-loving roommates, who are only looking to set their friend up with a commitment-free de-virginization. That's a really big word. Enter Wendy, doe-eyed, and the Klingon of Max's dreams. It's too bad her mama pint wants her back, leading Veronica on a judge blackmailing venture. Max buys out Wendy for a fat $10,000, but soon concludes that she didn't leave her digits after their SCCC fling. Leaving Max for good, Wendy takes up dancing at the Cat Scratch Club to pay back her debt to Max. Meanwhile, Papa Mars puts on his cop Chippendale costume to barter details out of the feminist trio. Nish egged the dean's Volvo while the other feminist egged his office. The farm they're getting the large amount of eggs from has yet to be disclosed. Oh yeah, and Madison socks Ronnie when lingerie shopping to reveal that during the love winter breakup, Madison and Logan did the dirty. So that's what happened in this episode. Not too much. I mean, it was an okay episode, sort of interesting, but nothing really plot-wise happens. But let's start with the mystery of the week and the Comic-Con hooker named Wendy. First, general thoughts about this mystery, about this plotline, like, dislike?
Indifference.
Yeah. Max's friends were very invested in his sex life to spend $1,000 to get him laid.
Right?
Why
would you spend $1,000?
I am not that invested in any of my friends' sex lives. So.
That's like one of those jokes. It's one of those jokes where you're like, hey, like, that would be really funny to do. And then you see how much it is and you're like, okay, I don't care this much about it.
Exactly.
But obviously they do. So I was mainly offended that Veronica was like so patronizing towards Comic-Con, and I was like, it's not that geeky, Veronica.
Right? And she was there. That's the funny part.
Yeah.
They were there this year. But whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
True that.
Was anybody
back in, like, what was this, 2007?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I guess so. Might have been a little bit more geeky. Was anybody happy to see Max back? Or was it just kind of like...
Yeah, I liked Max. I can't remember if I was on that episode or not, but I did like him in the first time. Yeah, I was, because I thought he was really funny. He was making jokes about, he was making jokes about, like, Occam's razor and stuff. And I was like, this guy's awesome. He's such a nerd. So, yeah, I was pleased to see him come back rather than be, like, a one-episode character. That was a nice throw. Like, yeah.
I liked that conversation about the irony of selling the tests for ethics.
Yes. That was amazing.
Yes. I like him a lot. He's fun. He's like a... he's kind of like a male version of Mac, maybe a little less so, but I don't know. He's fun to have around, so I was happy to see him. I wish the circumstances and the storyline had been a little bit better for him. Was Wendy's actress a believable hooker? Did anybody have a problem, or even with the hooker storyline in general, did anybody have a problem with it, or kind of believing the story?
I feel like all I do is complain. I feel like I should preface this conversation by saying that, but like, really, Veronica Mars, I just don't know why they go into these territories, like, in the first place, because just, you know, I think Veronica has become so condescending this season. I don't know if that's just me, but she seems so, like, more cynical than she was, and more condescending, and when she makes jokes about people now, it's not so much, I don't know, maybe it just didn't seem as bad when she was making jokes about people like Madison when they were in high school, but, you know, making jokes to, like, all the girls that were, like, Wendy and the other girls were prostitutes in this episode, and, like, Max about being a nerd and, like, his sex life, etc. It just makes me want to shake her. I don't know. It's, like, really, it really bothers me, and I think that was not helped by, like, the general portrayal of, like, sex work, etc. in Veronica Mars, which is like, yeah, all, you know, girls have any agency, and like, they're all forced to do these things, and there are like guys that beat people up if they like don't go ahead with it, and like, blah blah blah. Oh, stop it. Like, and the next episode will be 4,000 times worse in the Marima complaining state, so
I'll warn you right now.
Yeah, fun times ahead. Yeah, I mean, I think the actress was fine. Like, that didn't really bother me. Although I think the twist was fairly obvious that, you know, they were going to be like fake bruises and et cetera.
I was kind of, well, I liked that they kind of played with the hooker with the heart of gold thing, like, that goes on in a lot of stories, and mm-hmm. they were using that expectation and then twisting it and then twisting it again. So I kind of enjoyed that for what the story was, but Veronica was like immediately ready to be like revenge on Wendy when the other girl, she realized the other girl was faking her bruises. And like, my first thought was not that they were both playing him. It was that
the one was
playing both of them to get Wendy to come back. That was my first thought. And then that's what happened. But then Veronica was like, they were both playing you. We're going to destroy them. I'm like, what is going on with you? You are a little crazy right now. Like,
we're going straight to blackmail.
Yeah, and then she blackmailed a judge, like, and didn't even do it very smartly. Like, used her friend's phone and then, like, her own voice. Like, went herself to pick up the money at the bus locker. Like, you're smarter than this, Veronica.
It's like no disguise or anything. It was, yeah.
It was really dumb.
She could have done better. I agree. Throughout the episode, when Max kept like paying things or talking about paying, does selling tests like that really make you that much money? Like, I feel like he wouldn't have that much on hand or even in a savings that he could get immediately. I don't know. That just bothered me.
When he was selling it, wait, was he the one that sold it to Wallace?
Yes.
And wasn't it like, I can't remember the exact amount, but wasn't it like $50 for the test and then like $100 for the test and the answers, or like 100 and 200, something like that? That's like a reasonable amount of money, especially if, like, according to Veronica Mars, like, everyone cheats and everyone is a terrible person. So I feel like he's well-placed at Hearst to sell lots of those things. I don't know. Obviously, he's, like, got a business going. I just kind of assumed he had, like, money anyway. I don't know why. Maybe because he was throwing it around. I just assumed that there was, like, you know, some family money or something.
Well, you're in a small private liberal arts college. That's going to come across as people with money going there.
Okay. Well, see, I don't know these things. So cool. Good. Well deduced. Not, if it's just like his business, I'm like, oh, power to him if he's like working that out enough.
Well, he probably has a lot of repeat customers.
Yeah.
So probably makes a lot of money on those tests.
True that. True that.
Yeah. And the last thing I kind of wanted to talk about when it comes to, like, this hooker storyline was, did you have any sort of sympathy toward her once she was out? Like, the way we saw Max start to interact with her was different. Weevil came up to her and started talking about, like, her tattoo and how he remembers her dancing, and I felt like that was uncomfortable. Did you guys, I don't want to say enjoy it, but did that do anything for you at all? Or was it just still kind of a wait for this to be over?
I mean, it seems realistic.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely empathize with her. I mean, I think it was set up so that we would. I don't think she was meant to be a punchline in this, except at the start from Veronica. But yeah, towards the end, yeah, I felt bad for her, and you know, that it didn't work out with her and Max, but obviously, like, that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
Sad. Yeah. Veronica's line to him when she was like, you bought her out of prostitution and then she left you, that made my skin crawl a little, because it felt like she was implying that he bought her again in some way.
That he has ownership?
Yeah, in some way. Like, she got out of the life where she was being bought and sold essentially like a commodity. And then Veronica makes that comment, and I'm like, well, she's finally getting some agency and realizing that, you know, this relationship with Max isn't going to work because he's uncomfortable with her past. Like, so she's doing her own thing, like, finally. And that line just about having bought her out of it made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that is, like, in general, that seems to be my problem with Veronica Mars at the moment, is they do things like that. Like you said, they gave the character agency at the end, and, you know, she was going to pay him back. And I thought that was a really good twist on kind of what they had set up at the start with, mm-hmm. like you said, the trope of the heart of gold. But yeah, then they use Veronica to be so dismissive and, yeah, so condescending and about this whole thing. And it's really off-putting because they don't set up Veronica to be wrong, you know, like, you didn't listen to that line and think like, oh, shut up, V, you know, what are you talking about? It's that's her indignation is supposed to be ours, I feel like, when we're watching this. And yeah, for some reason this season, it's like really not resonating with me. And so lines like that stand out a lot more. And I definitely had the same reaction to that one.
I've always had a little bit of an issue with Veronica's superiority complex over other people, and I do agree that it's become worse this season.
Yeah, her self-righteousness is off the scale.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not even warranted as much anymore. Like, the first season, it's warranted because of all of the awful things that happened to her, and so we could kind of understand where she was coming from. Second season, maybe a little bit more, but I feel like with the third season, there was that clean slate feeling at the very beginning. And it just seems like now it seems like almost everything she does is out of context for her character, because we know that she can be better than maybe how she's acting at this moment. Like, we've seen her character be better, and it's just like, I don't know. I don't think it's even like a choice for the character itself. It's just the way that the writing is making her seem.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's like very noticeable that there has been a change in direction with the show for season three. And I can understand why fans, like, to my understanding, are fairly divided about whether they like it or they don't. Like, obviously, I'm veering towards they're not liking it so much side. But, you know, I really love the concept of it and everything. But, yeah, it does just feel like there's this weird twist on Veronica Mars in this season where all of the characters are not quite right. And they're all, yeah, just slightly out of character in a way that doesn't make sense for the show. And as this season progresses, that just seems to get worse, I think. But maybe that's just me.
At the end, we find it was all a dream.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, dear.
That'd be terrible. All right. Any last words, I guess, on the mystery of the week?
Oh, yes. I wrote this down because it was very important. The top that she's wearing, that like polka dot top that she was wearing when they are being disgusting and having like PDA on the couch in Logan's apartment mm-hmm. is so cute. And I really want it. I was very distracted by that. I was like, oh, I really want that top. But also I enjoyed Logan's interactions in these scenes a lot.
Really?
What?
Yeah. I am actually liking Logan a lot more in this season because I'm disliking Veronica so much.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's good good and bad. But I feel like he has a point in I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but like, yeah, when Veronica is like pressing him to tell her, you know, have you ever been with a prostitute and la la la, and he's like, just stop asking, just leave it alone.
That conversation.
Yeah, that was and is it in this one where she says like things have a like they tend to come out around me, and he's like, it's all the digging.
Yeah,
and yeah, like that basically summarizes like everything that is wrong with Veronica, and I thought that was a very apt point from Logan.
Yeah, that whole conversation where she was just like pressing and pressing and pressing, like, have you ever been with a prostitute? It's like, this comes out of like nowhere, and then she will not let it go. Mm-hmm. And Logan's like, I can't win no matter what I say in this conversation.
And I think that, I mean, like personally for me, it was definitely obvious that he was going to be like, no, I haven't, because they built it up so much. But I just feel like this is a long part of the long game of them breaking up Logan and Veronica, which like is what seems to be on the cards from my point of view, unless mm-hmm. there is a big turnaround, because all they do this season is like fight and not trust each other.
Which again, it's like a stretch on both of their characters. Cause yes, Veronica isn't trusting, but she always is going back and forth between those two.
Go ahead.
No, you please.
Oh, we're all so polite. Yeah, I was going to say, I agree. And I also think that even though Veronica is like very untrusting, I feel like by the end of season two, you reach the point where Logan was kind of the exception to that. Like whether or not I liked their relationship or not, there was definitely something there. And their kind of connection seemed to transcend this like general cynicism that she has for people. And in this season, it's kind of like, why are they dating? Because all she does is like ask him questions about, you know, like when she's asking about how his creepy friend, whose name I can't remember, got away in Mexico and came back.
Oh, Mercer.
And he's like, yeah, Mercer. And he's like, seriously? We're like, we're doing this now. So, yeah, it's just, I feel like it's just built into all these storylines in it. And I feel weird because I'm siding with Logan on like all of these. Cause I'm like, yeah, he has a point. Stop asking weird questions. Like, just leave it alone.
Yeah. And you can tell that her questions were immediately poised to be invasive or even accusing because I could see them having the same conversation in a lighthearted way. Like I could see myself having that conversation with someone in like a funny sort of way. And that's definitely not how it was approached. And I feel like possibly in season one or season two, if around the times where they had been dating, like that would have been something that they would have talked about in a more joking manner rather than the way that it was brought out this time, if that makes sense.
I agree. No, that totally makes sense. And just thinking about it now while we're talking about it, I guess another reason why they needed to have that conversation was so they could have an avenue for Veronica to ask if he had been with anyone while they were broken up. Because mm-hmm. that sort of tied into that. And I mean, that was very clearly Madison when he says, some like person that I regret. And you're like, duh, it's Madison.
Yeah.
And Veronica's like, what? Madison? Ah! So.
Well, I guess they set up the hookup at the beach right before to give you a little doubt, but it was like, duh, Madison.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, duh.
I don't know. It's uncomfortable. And I mean, it, like you said, it's really obvious, especially when Madison comes over to their place or to Logan's place. It's like, really? You can't see that kind of stuff? But whatever. It's a TV show, like so it's fine.
I do not like her new hairstyle.
Madison?
Not at all. No.
I didn't even recognize her until someone said her name.
Is yeah. it bangs? Is that what, yeah, I do yeah. not like it. It's, yeah, it's, it doesn't work for her.
All right, so let's move on to Keith's investigation, because I think that was a little bit more interesting, especially since it deals with the dean. He dresses up in, well, it sounds really funny, but he puts on his old sheriff's uniform and goes to interrogate these girls. I don't know. I enjoyed that scene. I enjoyed how Nish came out and kind of took charge and knew everything and even like chastised the girls, saying like, do you not read the paper? Do you not watch TV? Like, do you not know who this person is? I thought that was sort of tongue in cheek. Like, cause you would think that all of these people would know who he was. I don't know. I enjoyed it. What did you think about that? Or just like the scene plotline in general?
Yeah, I liked it. I guess, you know, they had to have Nish say that, because otherwise we would all be like, seriously, why do they not know who Keith Mars is?
Exactly.
But I, you know, like I really don't like the quote unquote feminists right. on this season, as I've made no secret of.
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess that's fine. I'm not a big Nish fan in general, obviously. So I could do without seeing her, but, you know, they've obviously made a decision to tie them from the first third rape storyline into the second third or the second half Dean murder plot line. So that's fine, I guess. I just want to know more about the dean, and like, just I just want to hang out with the dean and like have him just hang out in the cafeteria and have lunch and be like watching sports in his office and just having like a bromance with Weevil. I want those scenes. I miss the dean, you guys.
And I'm sure Weevil does too. He seems to really yeah. like the guy, and he's so sad.
He really yeah. is.
He had a good line in this, actually. Maybe I'll make that my favorite line when he's talking about the dean. And I was like, yeah, because they were, like, hanging out and, you know, he was, like, gave Weevil a chance and that was nice. I like when Weevil just pops up, which is good because, like, these episodes did not have Mac or Piz in them. So
or
I was
Wallace.
Highly disappointed Wallace. About that. Yeah, no one cares about Wallace, though. Mac and Piz is where it's at. So not even Parker was in this one, who I kind of don't mind now. Yeah, so... I mean, that's good, I guess. I'm glad that they're moving on with this storyline. Like, it seems to be progressing a reasonable rate.
But Weevil brought up the most important question of the episode, which was, what did someone try and flush down that faculty toilet?
Oh, yeah. I was like, wait, come back. I want to know.
I don't think very much was introduced in the investigation. Besides the
cars. Cars.
That's right. So thoughts about the dean's wife, besides the fact that she had an affair and she's maybe slightly sketch? Do you see her as a main suspect?
I never liked her since we found out she was having the affair. Because, like, why would you cheat on the dean? He's awesome.
Exactly.
Well, so yeah. She was there that night, assuming, because they found the egg on her car. So is she the one that the dean said, what are you doing here to? Like, that was kind of my first thought.
Yeah, but it could have been her or the boyfriend. The, what's his name? The professor.
Landry.
Like the car was definitely there, I think is what they were saying.
But because, why would Landry have taken her car?
Well, because weren't they both at the hotel together?
But wouldn't have he had his own car?
I don't know. Like, why would she have taken her car and then shot him and then... Like, obviously, I can't remember which episode this is in, but obviously, like, not cleaned it very well.
Well, I don't think she did it. Like, I don't see any motive for her that we've come up with at this point. Like, that she couldn't get away with like, hiring a divorce attorney or something.
I don't think she's the obvious suspect, which makes me think it's not her.
But if she was there that night, like, she must have had some kind of conversation with him before... he was killed.
That she's, like, reluctant to share. Yeah, but I kind of want it to be the Landry, because I really don't like him. So that would be good to get rid of him.
I feel like a lot of us on the podcast or a lot of people don't care for Landry, and I find that really interesting. I think it was like a knee-jerk reaction right away when he came in. So it's interesting.
I mean, I think he's too really obvious, sleazy. Too.
He's so sleazy, though. Like, that's why we wouldn't like him. He just seems so gross. Ugh.
He doesn't bother me, besides the fact that he's having an affair, but so's like half of the cast at some point. So.
Oh, yeah. See, the affair thing, it bothers me. The Dean's wife bothers me more than Landry does, in that sense, about the affair. I don't know. Maybe I feel like season three did a clever thing where the season one and two did not do. Where season one and two, the person that was behind it, like the villain, if you will, was kind of a side character that had been present all the time, but we never really thought about. Mm-hmm. And then in season three with Mercer, they did, like, I thought it was really clever where they accused him at the start and then cleared him and then went back to him. So because of that, I have, like, moved away from my general Veronica Mars thing of, like, well, it's going to be the side character who has been there but has, like, we have had no reason to suspect until, you know, we find out he's a sociopath or whatever. So that makes me think maybe it will be one of the more obvious choices, like the Dean's wife or Landry. But I agree with Caitlin at the moment. I feel like there's no motive there, really. Like, we don't know any reason why that would be necessary, like you said, instead of getting a divorce or something. So,
and especially in the next episode, we find out more right. about the Dean's wife.
Yeah.
And why she has no motive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So let's get there. I mean, any last words about Poughkeepsie Tramps and Thieves? Probably not.
Don't get hookers for your friends. Don't be that invested in their sex lives.
And don't buy one-piece lingerie.
Yes. Exactly. All right, so favorite scenes. Mine was Veronica walks into their home and she sees her dad and asks him to, like, entertain her or something. And so in order to do so, Keith does, like, a singing telegram report about what he found out about the Dean's suicide. And I thought it was very entertaining. Caitlin, your favorite scene, please.
Mine was when Veronica comes into Keith's room to see him putting his uniform on, and she breaks him the boombox and is like, thrust your pelvis toward the bachelorette. It's her special day. It was hilarious, like, because Keith treats her like she's a 40-year-old, so she can get away with saying that to him.
Exactly. And Narima, favorite scene?
My favorite scene was Keith versus Lamb, which I always like when Lamb looks like a fool, but I simultaneously like it and find it incredibly frustrating. But it was kind of when he's getting the report about the Dean's suicide, and he basically, I can't remember the exact quote, but he's basically like to Lamb, like, you know, maybe you'll try doing some investigations on time. And Lamb's like, oh, yeah, right. And then, like, Keith walks away and Lamb, like, you just see him thinking about what just happened. And he's yes. like, what? I'm like, good times.
When Lamb sees Keith in his uniform later.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Yes.
Lamb is my least favorite character, I think.
He's just so frustrating.
It's so preposterous. How does he have that job? Everyone knows that he's crap.
Yeah.
And it also, the other thing that I find really annoying is how he always makes jokes to Keith about, like, oh, like, do you want to accuse someone else? And it's like every single time Keith has accused someone, it's proved to be right. So.
It's just frustrating. I feel like they were going to give him some sort of character development and they're like, nah, never mind.
Yeah, they're like, let's just make him a cop with donuts instead. Like, that'll be a funny, yeah. I like the scenes.
Yeah, have a weight bench in his office.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what every sheriff does. Everybody knows
Duh.
That.
Duh. Yeah.
And so in a landslide, Keith wins favorite scenes because he was in all of ours. So good for Keith Mars. Gold star.
MVP.
All right, favorite lines. Mine came from Veronica when she's sort of criticizing Max about the love he found at Comic-Con. And she counters one of his, I don't know, I don't want to call it ramblings because that's insensitive, but one of his memories with, and how when you see a plastic bag flying around you, you think there's so much beauty in the world, you can't take it. And even though she was being quite mean, I really like that line because it's hilarious, because it refers to American Beauty. And all I can think of when I think about that movie is that plastic bag flying around and Ricky videotaping it. So, I enjoyed
it. Oh,
yeah.
I totally did not catch that reference, but that makes that so much funnier.
Yes, American Beauty. And I think that was, she like twists the line around, but that's pretty much the line too, is that there's so much beauty in the world that you can't take it. So,
nice.
Good stuff. Yeah. Caitlin, your favorite line, please.
Mine was a conversation between Keith and Veronica. Keith says to Veronica, will you be home for dinner? And she says, no, I'm meeting two hookers over at Logan's later. And Keith kind of looks at her and goes, on a school night? Veronica says, off-peak hours, save a few bucks.
Which is probably actually true because he had to pay for them to come, too. So it worked out for her.
And then the conversation goes on. He's like, you're not really doing that. And she's like, you with your bourgeois hang-ups. Like, what?
I feel like that's the only true, I don't want to say the only true Veronica Mars that's left, but like that's our only tie to like season one to season three is their relationship, I feel. Or at least this aspect of the relationship. And so it's nice to see it when it comes around.
It seems like she's been pushing Keith a little more just with, like, risque things she's saying to him.
She's a college girl now, Caitlin.
It's true.
She's, like, so mature. Yeah.
Worldly. She knows everything. Marima, did you come up with a favorite line? I think you said something about... Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Weevil because he feels my pain and because I didn't write anything else down. So I'm going to give it to Weevil when he says he was a good guy, the Dean, you know, it's a damn shame. And it is, Weevil. It's a damn shame.
Yes. I like it. It's good. I'm very sorry again for your loss.
Oh, thank you.
Focuses on the personal victimization.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a support
we'll get through
group
this
for that.
Together. Yes. Yeah. Oh.
Oh boy. All right. So let's go to episode 12, which is called There's Gotta Be a Morning After Pill. And here is your Here is your synopsis. In this episode, Veronica takes on the case of the promiscuous Bonnie, sometimes lover of Dick, girlfriend of creepy TA Tim, who has slipped an abortion pill early in a pregnancy she wished to complete. While visiting the set for Bonnie's televangelist father's show, V learns that he welcomed the miracle of a granddaughter. Veronica then sneaks into Tim's computer to browse his potential abortion search history, but discovers instead the TA's investigation of the Dean's murder. Later, creeper pics are sent to Keith of V at a Hard Knock Life abortion clinic, along with pamphlets that lead the two down a fruitless Nancy Drew rabbit hole. Some final act sleuthing leads Veronica to the conclusion that Bonnie's roommate slipped the pill. Meanwhile, love breaks up. Again, from the Madison thing, Veronica uses Weevil to almost crush Madison's shiny new car, and Keith responds to a break-in call from the foxy Mindy Odell. Thanks, Mitch, for that. Okay. I don't know why, but they're so hard to read today, the synopses.
Mitch did a good job.
He did.
This is funny.
He did. I wish I could read it better. I don't know why.
Although I think it's funny that he thinks Mindy is foxy.
Yes. I agree. All right. So I'm assuming this note is from Ariana, and she just jumped into our doc and says, Veronica is such a holier-than-thou bitch sometimes. That's all I have to say about that. So,
yes. Preach.
Preach. A little bit, yeah. And it's kind of interesting to see her against the backdrop of the church in this episode. So, yeah, that's fun.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'd call it fun, but that's the first word that came to mind, unfortunately. But let's talk about Veronica as Nancy Drew, both actually literally and just in terms of her sleuthing. thoughts about this investigation or this mystery of the week? I know, Marima, you said you had very strong thoughts. I'm assuming it's about this? Or is it about something else?
Yeah, no, it's about this, and it just makes me mad. Like, I just want Veronica Mars to go back to, like, murdering people and, like, bus crashes. That's safer than, like, abortion and sex work and rape storylines. Because they are so bad at the feminist thing. They are so bad at it. There has not been on this show, at least not this season, like a legitimate portrayal of feminism, I don't think. Certainly not in Veronica. Like, she sucks. So, you know, in the side characters as well, like, the commentary is just so bad. And it just makes me think that, like, I really don't want to know who is in this writer's room because it's very frustrating. But, like, this is such a, again, a really sensitive topic that they are approaching. And to do it in this kind of throwaway manner, and the fact that the other characters only refer to it, like literally, this girl was slipped a drug that killed a baby that she wanted to be born, or, like, a fetus, or whatever you your personal belief is. Like, it was against her will, and it was against her own, like, agency to make decisions. And all of the other characters respond to it by being like, oh, that's so sad. Anyway, like, let's make jokes about things. And that bugged me so much. I just really wish they would stay away from these because I don't think they do them well. And I think they have, yeah, there's a lot of issues in both, like, the portrayals of various, like, stereotypes and people, and also, like, in the commentary that they inadvertently perhaps offer through someone like Veronica, that, yeah, it detracts. I can't watch this episode and be like, oh, I enjoy it as an episode because of all of these other things that are going on. And I will stop ranting now.
Do you think that any of these changes may have something to do with it moving to the CW? Like, do you see any of these as sort of CW tropes,
yeah, well, I guess like, I don't, because we don't get your channels, so that's it's true. Hard to know what Sorry. Is, like, well, I don't really, like, what are some other CW shows? What is currently on the CW?
Currently, we have The Vampire Diaries, we had last year, we had Gossip Girl.
Yeah, that tells me everything I need to know. Yeah, okay, so definitely CW.
around this time, when Veronica Mars was on, there was One Tree Hill. That was around too. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. That was very very good. So I would probably say that it has a lot to do with the network changes. I just don't know. They seem to have such an insistence on doing this, like, grown up college, you know, thing. But I just wish that the grown up college experience, they could pull on some other things apart from, like, oh, guys cheat on test papers and girls get raped and have abortions. You know what I mean? That's kind of where this season has been going for me, and it's not good.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, I did boring things in college, so let's say, let's take a walk around campus, or hey, like, let's go around campus and, like, try to get up on the roofs of things, or just...
Yeah, but, I mean... Yeah, there are lots of things, like the casino, right? The casino that guy had in his dorm room.
Yeah.
And you know, it focused on, like, the robbery and stuff. I mean, that could have happened to a girl. There's no reason why that couldn't have happened to a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And focus on that kind of storyline. But instead, the only time that they have involved women in this season has been either they have been raped or they have pretended that they have been raped. Or, like, with the sorority storylines, prostitutes and abortions, you know? So they've been very selective with their portrayals, and I get that they're trying to be, like, grown up and college and whatever, but they don't do it well enough. So I wish they had just left it alone.
Now that you say that, that's just, like, sex related for the women.
Yeah, literally.
Rape, pretend rape, abortion, like, that's... straight sex topics, yeah, for the women.
Exactly. And it's an issue. I feel like it's a major issue with this show now.
Yeah, especially since we know that it can do better, which is the heartbreaking part. Because, yeah. I mean, we like the show, we're fans of the show, but it's just, it can get tough, it can get rough.
Well, that's why I think we care so much, because, well, definitely why I care, because I really enjoyed seasons 1 and 2, and obviously there was, before people start complaining, like, there was obviously an element of sex in those as well, because we started off with a date rape storyline, but there were other things going on, and even though I would be the first to admit, like, there always has been sort of a focus on sex in Veronica Mars, and I guess that's just where they've been going with it, but it just seems a lot more prevalent in this season. So, and this just really, like, hit it home for me.
It's kind of saying that women can't have stories outside of sex.
Exactly.
Which, we have lots of stories outside of sex in college that we can deal with.
Exactly.
Yep.
Anyway. I think it's also really noticeable that we're not seeing the recurring characters very much, so we're being forced into these kind of broad caricatures of quote-unquote college life rather than maybe focusing on some of the characters we care about. So I don't know if they just only signed the actors for like half the episodes or something and have to be very selective about when they use them, but it's very noticeable and it takes away from the overall feel.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, like the ensemble cast, you have more to deal with. You have all of these different dynamics between the characters. And I think I remember on one of our posts on Hyperbole, someone talking about how Tina, the girl who plays Mac, like she had another show going on at the same time or was starting one. And so she was kind of going back and forth between that. But I'm not sure about the other characters. But I feel like one of Veronica Mars's strong points was with that well thought out and well characterized ensemble cast, because you see how everybody fit together. So to follow the certain pieces, it's a little less fulfilling. Like you see a lot of the cracks, whereas when they're all together, it just feels like a more whole show, I guess.
Yeah, she leaned on Wallace and she leaned on Mac to solve mysteries in high school, and that's very, like, obviously missing in this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me wonder about their budget and things. And obviously, like, yeah, people who had other commitments. Which is a shame.
It is. So let's try to get back on topic a little bit here. Were you surprised, I guess, in the same murder mystery of the week, or not murder, sort of murder, I guess, depending on how you think of it. Were you surprised that it was the roommate? And what her motivations were. Her motivations kind of bothered me, because again, it's like, I know you better than you know yourself, and so I'm going to take control of you.
That she had no right to do that. That was really, really awful.
Yeah.
Like, I was so bothered by that she would do that.
Was it on your... I'm sorry.
Just, it's someone that she considered to be close to her, that she would do something like that. Totally take away her agency, disregard her wishes in every way, and do something that probably ends up being very traumatic for Bonnie. Like, that's really awful.
Was she on your radar at all, on either of yours, for possible perpetrators?
I was kind of waiting for them to play with the fire and brimstone televangelist father, so, and then that didn't pan out, which I kind of appreciated.
Yeah,
he was actually a nice guy. And supportive of his daughter, but
a lot of time I feel like the televangelists have a really bad rap. So yeah, what else was I gonna ask? Oh, I was just thinking about it, and how much of a difference does it make? Do you feel any better about the fact that it was, I guess, a girl-on-girl crime rather than the male-on-female body crime? Not that it's really a great thing that either of them happened, but is there any difference in the way that it worked out that it was girl-on-girl instead of male-on-female?
I think in some ways it's, like, it's better and then it's worse in certain ways. But I think, you know, it's really, like, if it had been one of the potential fathers, like, there's a whole other level of messed up.
Yeah.
A man slipping woman a drug that gets rid of this child, that takes away choice and all that. Like, there's a whole level of awful there. But then for a woman to do it to another woman, like, total absence of girl power and all that kind of thing. Like, girl-on-girl violence does not need to be happening in any respect. And that's exactly what that was. And so I feel like in that respect, it's even more awful, especially because their portrayal of feminists was so awful in the season. Like, such broad caricature of being militant to get that then is just a lot of strokes against what we want to see in relationships between women.
Yeah, it's like in this case, there really isn't a lesser of two evils. But I was just curious because I was thinking about it because I wanted to know how maybe we would react if it was one of the men. But I mean, I never thought that it would be Dick anyway. So, because I love Dick too much. But
it's like, it's a completely different story if it's one of the men.
Exactly.
And it's really awful if it's one of them. I mean, it's really awful that it happened, period. But it's awful for a different reason if it's one of the men.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I would basically agree with what Caitlin said. I think the issue is not so much like girl and girl versus the guy on girl. It's like in the context of the show. So because the context of the show is so poor towards women, it makes it a big issue that they're presenting women as if it's this trope of like backstabbing and you can't trust like the best friend, the you know, like all of these things where it kind of puts women against women is like always an issue in media. And obviously if it was a guy, then there would be like huge issues with agency and all of those kinds of things. But those issues don't go away just because it's a girl. So honestly, I don't think there was really any way they could have approached this that would have made me think that it was an okay way to do the storyline, because I just don't think this is the kind of thing that you can do in like 40 minutes of episode. You know, and it was clearly meant to be like a one-off episode. So, yeah, but I mean, it's a good point. And I think it's like something worth thinking about. But again, like in a show like Veronica Mars, you can't take these things as on an episode by episode basis. I think you have to look at it in the broader context. And the context of season three, at least, is like not great towards women. So any of these storylines that I suppose portray women as like manipulative and, you know, like just this, yeah, this whole trope of like, you know, you can't, women can't support other women and stuff. I mean, it was already a huge issue with Veronica's interactions with other women, I think. Mm-hmm. And this didn't help.
So I want to talk about Tim a little bit, her creepy boyfriend. I guess the TA. I want to talk about first his reaction to her pregnancy. How did you feel about him screaming at her at that party a few episodes ago and then turning around and being a supportive person in Bonnie's life when it comes to having a baby that may or may not be his? Did that seem out of character? Did it seem strange?
Yeah, but I feel like Tim is not the most fully formed character anyway.
Okay.
You know, for me, I suppose it felt like they wanted to include or like have a link back to another character that we already knew, but it could have just as easily been some random girl and her random boyfriend. So the fact that it went from this huge fight to, you know, so supportive and la la la, like, yeah, it definitely felt out of character, but at this point that's really the least of my concerns with Mars.
True.
So I was not like jumping up and down on that point. But Tim is like a strange dude. I mean, this guy is weird. So yeah, that's, I guess maybe he's just consistently strange. I don't know.
Maybe they're trying to paint him in a slightly better light to maybe steer some of the focus for the big mystery off of him, since he's another suspect.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because he is investigating the dean's murder, suicide. He is investigating it, and he had those files on his computer, and he also had an extra piece of evidence that Keith Mars didn't have and that the police didn't have. So what did you think about his investigation, that he's conducting it on his own, and how he might be even tied to it?
Oh my God, my favorite bit was Veronica putting tape on the locks. It was so Watergate. It was amazing. I was like, history jokes. Like, yay. I do like the consistency of, like, we had Tim investigating the rape storyline and now we have him investigating this. So that makes sense. And, you know, I guess, but once again, it's like all these people have so much pride that if they all just like hung out together and like had a chat, they could probably work it out instead of like hoarding their information, which seems counterproductive.
A little bit.
Well, awesome. Tim is the same guy that concocted this entire mystery to basically prove to himself that Veronica was a worthy successor to how awesome he was. Like, he's kind of a proud jerk, I guess.
Tim is such a douche, I think is the word you're looking for.
I was like, what's the family-friendly version of this word that I can use?
Yeah, he's a massive jerk.
So, but I thought it was sketchy that he had that evidence and the guy was like, oh, it was probably gossip that he found out, but I know you, Veronica Mars, like, that's not probably true.
Oh, that was
unless it's just bad writing.
That could be too. We've had our share of that.
It's a bad sign when you start to think, oh, maybe it's just bad writing. That's terrible.
Yeah, it's not a good thing for a
not
TV
a good
show.
Sign. No. Let's see. Let's continue with the Odells here. Skip around a little bit today because I feel like it. And talk about Mindy Odell and her house break-in. Were you surprised to see her, I think, ex-husband? I think that's what his relationship is to her. Come back and be the one breaking into the house? So, no, I was surprised.
I'm so glad they brought him back, because I seriously thought he was going to be one of those characters that, like, we just never heard from again, and we were meant to forget that, like, they basically kidnapped and drugged and like took organs from this guy without his consent.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, kind of a big deal. So yeah, I really liked that he came back and he was like to Keith, hey, like, you were an accomplice to this as well, so like, you're no moral authority yourself.
The Mars family has no moral superiority anywhere.
Oh yeah, but doesn't stop them from like acting like it.
Yeah,
you know. They believe they do. So, I liked that he came back. I was definitely surprised to see him.
And I think it was interesting that, like, obviously, when there's a death in the family, some of the income is going to go away. But I didn't even think about the fact that she would have cut off the alimony payments. And so I'm glad that they kind of, that's sort of like a detail that I feel would fall on the wayside. So I'm glad that they expanded on that, or they actually included it as a conflict.
Well, it goes to her not having motive to murder her husband and set it up as a suicide, because if it's ruled a suicide, she doesn't get the life insurance payment,
right?
Which she needed the money, and she obviously does not have the money of either her husband's income or the life insurance. So really, where's her motive for doing it? So it just makes her seem more and more in the clear.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was pretty sketch that she stopped the payments, though. Like, I don't think she's a very nice person.
I don't either.
In general. And this didn't add to that. But I think you're right. It definitely, decreases her probability of being involved.
Wary of her teenage son, though.
Yeah.
They made a point of having Keith look in his room. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she had the conversation telling Keith, like, they almost sent him off to, like, a reform school or something.
Yeah, exactly. And you're always like, I know what you're doing, Veronica Mars. Like, this is not a throwaway line.
Yeah, I'm, like, looking for every throwaway line. I'm like, maybe this is not so throwaway.
Veronica Mars has got you trained now. It's kind of fun.
Well, Caitlin was totally blindsided by Beaver. Meanwhile, I totally saw that coming. So now she's like, I must, like, suspect everyone.
I will defend no one in this show ever again. I will suspect everybody of every crime.
Well, I will defend the Dean because he's dead. And I'll also defend Kendall because she's awesome. She's dead. I'm
also dead. I mean, that's one strategy you could use, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right. Another thing that is dead is love.
Oh, no.
How's that for a transition? Was that good? Is that
nicely
all right?
Nicely done.
That was impressive.
So going back to those conversations that Logan and Veronica had in bed, yet again, she has a confrontation with him. And I don't know, how do you feel about Logan having slept with someone when they weren't together versus having slept with Madison? One, does it make a difference that it was Madison to you? And two, does it make a difference if they were broken up or not? And that's a lot.
It makes a huge difference that they were broken up. Like,
yeah.
I had a really big issue with Veronica's reaction to this. Like, she was taking the whole thing very personally. You did this to hurt me. You knew how much it would hurt me, which I would understand if she had broken up with him the first time, so he had a reason to want to get back at her somehow. Mm-hmm. But he broke up with her the first time. So there's absolutely zero reason for him to go out and find, like, sleep with Madison because he knew it would hurt Veronica. Like, there is zero logic there. And that just kind of goes back to Veronica being very self-absorbed, moral superiority. It's kind of like the entire world doesn't always revolve around you, Veronica. She was probably just convenient.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, I think Veronica has a point about being like, if there is one person that you knew would, like, upset me to this extent, it would be Madison. And I find it difficult to think that, like, I understand they've set it up that Logan is, like, this guy that acts before he thinks and la la la, but, like, I know that Logan's a smart guy, and I think Veronica is right to say, like, you must have realized at some point, like, how upset I would be if I found out. And obviously he did realize because he didn't tell her. And you know, he, like, says, yeah, I slept with someone, but he intentionally left out who it was, and I think for this very reason. But, yeah, I mean, she definitely overreacted and, yeah, like, turned into a crazy person about this entire situation.
Which
I feel
she
weird
even noticed.
When I, like, yeah, I feel weird when I, like, am sympathizing with Logan, so I'm just not sure what my brain is doing right now. But, yeah, I mean, I felt bad for Logan.
It feels like manufactured drama when they broke up to get back together to break up within, like, two episodes. Like, why did we need that reconciliation to break up again?
Yeah, I'm really curious if, again, like, this just seems to be the ongoing thing of season three, if this was, like, a studio direction or something that they needed more, you know, Veronica romance drama. Because I guess by the end of season two, when they get back together at, like, the very, very end, you think, like, okay, well, that's it now. Like, they're back together. We'll worry about other things. And you're right. It feels very contrived.
I know that it was that their relationship was definitely a center point during season three. Because from what I can remember about promos and from what I think a few people in the comments have noted was that sometimes they would completely gloss over the mystery of the week. And some of the promos were just completely about their relationship. So the drama that was going on between them, whether they were broken up or together or whatever was going on with them, it was centered on them and everything else was just kind of happening around them. So I'm not sure if that was a studio direction, but it kind of looks like it to me.
Yeah, it seems like it must have been. And it's annoying because I am not at all invested in their relationship. And so for a viewer like me, who is, like, more invested in, I guess, the various characters and stuff, for this to suddenly turn into, like, a relationship drama, which it has been to an extent, but it was never the focus, is, like, irritating, to say the least.
Maybe one thing if the relationship drama was organic.
Yeah.
But it's not.
No, well, exactly. And yeah, I guess, again, it could go back to, like, the availability of the other actors and stuff. Like, maybe they knew that it was going to have to be a smaller cast, or that the cast would have to be much more spread out in their appearances. So they thought, oh, well, we'll get the two leads, and if we focus on them, it won't matter so much that the others are missing. Which, you know, I can understand from, like, a logic point of view, but, yeah, it just feels really, like, contrived and annoying.
Like a roller coaster for no reason. Like, I enjoy the two of them together. I'm not anti-love, anything like that. But yeah, it seems really forced when they have to be put in these situations. And to go back to Veronica's reaction to Logan and Madison, I'm kind of in the middle of both of you. While I do think she made it a lot about her and about how what Logan would be doing would be hurting her, at the same time, I do feel like Madison was the first person he could jump into bed with. But also at some point, I thought that I got the impression that Logan hated Madison at some point just for what she did to Veronica. Like every time Logan found out that someone had done something to Veronica, it always appeared to me like he was personally offended by it because someone he cares so much about was offended. So with that in mind, I do feel that it's a little strange that he ended up with Madison, even if it was just a availability sort of thing. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And was it in this episode where Dick is like, yeah, you slept with my, you're like, you don't do that to your friends.
I
was like, good. Yeah, I'm glad that he called him out on that as well.
Violation of the bro code.
It was just ridiculous from, like, all perspectives. There was not a single thing about this that you were like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so again, I don't like doing this, but I feel like that was more of a writing thing rather than a character thing. Like, I'm more mad at the way that it turned out than the character himself.
Totally. Yeah. I totally agree.
Which, again, I don't like doing, but it feels that way.
Yeah, and like, before we move on, I just have to say that, obviously, I have never been the hugest fan of Logan on this show, but the way that this season is going, like, I'm actually much more sympathetic to Logan's perspective than Veronica's at the moment, because she's being crazy. Like, she's being a crazy person, and like a person like Veronica does not belong in a relationship in her current state, because if you can't trust someone, like, you have no business being in a relationship with them, and she obviously can't. And I think this is just like the tipping point of all of these things that I agree the writers have put into this season to break them up so that there can be drama, so that they can put it in, you know, the promos or whatever.
Yeah. And before we move on from the love storyline, there was one scene in here, and that was Logan's, albeit drunken, heartfelt message to Veronica, which she didn't even listen to.
Cliche.
Yeah. I'm caught between seeing it as a cliche and then also sort of seeing it as sort of as more character development for Logan. I don't know how I feel.
Well, it's more cliche of just like she deleted the phone call before she got to the apology part.
Okay,
like,
yes.
And that's going to be miscommunication that's going to cause issues later on. Like, that's a pretty common trope.
Miscommunication in Veronica
drama,
Mars?
So.
Veronica Mars, there's no miscommunication ever. What are you talking about?
But this is totally Logan. He says what he's going to say when he's drunk. Like, he said all, like, our story is epic when he was drunk at the prom and then has his drunken apology phone call. So he clearly gets out what's on his chest when he's drunk.
Yeah, but if you can only say it when you're drunk, like, no one cares. If you have to be able to say it when you're sober, it doesn't count.
Fair enough.
So if you're talking to Veronica, I don't know.
I can't bring myself to care much about this because every week it just feels like they go back and forth, and that's fine, but it's not interesting and it hasn't been written in a compelling way. So even if I was invested in this relationship, I can't imagine that I would be like loving this turn of events.
Right. Yeah. Understandable. But I guess there was sort of one good thing that came out of this turn of events, and that was Veronica, well, crazy Veronica, I guess, teaming up with Weevil or asking for Weevil's help to crush Madison's car. And so we kind of saw a classic Weevil, a glimpse of that again, which was nice. Yes?
The Weevil with Hayton on Logan, so that bromance is clearly dead.
Yeah.
Oh, and that was great. I love that.
He's logical. It makes sense. I mean, he sees the things that Logan has done. I think he kind of has the same sort of view on it that Merrima did, or does. Whereas, like, here are all the awful things he's done. You shouldn't be with him. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that's fine, but it doesn't make sense because Weevil never had an issue with any of it before. And then suddenly this season, he's like, what are you doing dating Logan? Like, what's up with that? Logan is a horrible guy. Look at what he did to Lily. And you're like, where did this come from?
Where was this?
If Weevil has reason to be upset with anyone, I feel like it's Veronica. And he's just like, my best friend. Like,
yeah, exactly. Logan... Why doesn't anyone have an issue with Veronica?
Like, in Weevil's position, I would never want to talk to Veronica again.
She is the center of all the problems.
Which is frustrating. Like, but at the same time, it is kind of nice to not have a perfect protagonist.
Yeah, but I was just thinking, like, Veronica in this season is becoming the type of protagonist where, like, I really hate, like, Grey's Anatomy, Meredith, and then the OC, Marissa, and then there are, like, all these shows where the lead character is the one that you're like, oh, just let me see the other people. And Veronica Mars was never like that. It was always a good balance of, like, sometimes she's frustrating, but that's because she's, like, a well-drawn character, and, you know, you shouldn't like all characters all the time unless they're the Dean or Piz, because they're amazing. but, like, now she's just super annoying all the time and very frustrating. So I kind of wish she'd cubed the car, I have to say. That would have been more interesting for me.
Same.
Yeah, I was like, just do it. Just do it. I was cool with the Veronica and Weevil team again. That was nice.
It was nice. And I liked Weevil. I liked seeing Weevil in that sort of element again. Because seeing him in a custodial outfit just isn't the same.
So you wouldn't think he would want to risk stealing Rich Girl's car when he's... like, on probation for murder.
Yeah.
Or, I guess, pleaded down to assault, but, like, that's really risky.
Details.
Sometimes I feel like the writers of season 3 haven't seen seasons 1 and 2.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
I did like, though, that he charged her.
Yes.
It kind of kicked her off the family and friends plan.
Yeah.
Well, she's kind of overstayed.
Hmm. He didn't actually end up charging her, though, did he?
She gave him money.
Did she?
Yeah, she's like, here's something for your trouble.
Yeah, that's good.
But he told her he was charging her, and she got this kind of upset look on her face.
And I was like, damn right.
Exactly. All right, well, I think we kind of put out our opinion on everything we have here. Any last thoughts about... There's got to be a morning after pill. I feel like we hit everything.
I think we've complained about most things.
Yes, I think we did. I mean, complained, but we had backup. We could back ourselves up, so it was okay then, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's okay to, like, critically think about a television show that you really like.
Yes.
That's okay. That's like basically my number one hobby. I'm, you know, it's kind of what I do with everything. So I have hopes of Veronica Mars that the Dean storyline will kind of fix the my issues with the earlier part of this season, but just like the love drama is not helping.
Yeah. All right. Favorite scenes for this episode. Mine was Veronica being Nancy Drew with her father investigating when they first called her out as Nancy Drew. It got an audible chuckle out of me, which is good. So it was fun. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene? Please do tell.
For stealing yours.
Yeah.
Mine was Logan's voicemail. It was when he left it, not when Veronica deleted it.
Yes. It's so good. I don't know. I enjoyed it, drunk or not. And Marima, your favorite scene, please.
My favorite scene was Veronica's hissy fit, because it was really funny and, like, very in character. And I just enjoyed it a lot.
She just kept going on and on and on.
Yeah.
And told me I was adopted.
Yeah, it's like the worst day of my life. Oh my god. And I was like, what girl hasn't done that though?
It's perfect. Yes, I agree with that. Favorite scene is wonderful. And then favorite lines. Mine was a Veronica voiceover, and she said, or I think it was a voiceover. I think it was towards Dick, though. And she said, it must be a liberating thing not to be cursed with a moral compass.
Oh, irony.
Yeah. I think that's part of the reason why I like
judge. It. A girl who blackmailed a judge last episode. Okay, yeah. Veronica.
Yeah, okay. For real.
Caitlin?
So mine has to do with Marma's favorite scene when Veronica says, sometimes when things don't work out the way a girl wants them to, there's nothing quite as satisfying as the hissy fit.
Love it.
So true. And Marma.
Oh, well, it's 3 for 3 for Veronica.
Hey.
And yeah, she gets my favorite line as well when she's talking to Weevil. And she says, did I come here for therapy or to get a car stolen and cubed? And I have often wondered the same thing. So I like that a lot.
All right. Well, it looks like the Mars family completely swept this podcast. So good for them. So that's all that we have for the episodes. If you want to get in contact with us, and I think probably after this episode you may, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. And you can also comment on this post on Hypeable. Start a conversation. Tell us about your opinions, because we had quite a few, but we want to know what you have to say. And if you are feeling relatively generous or just in a good mood, please leave us a review on iTunes. That way other people can find us, and it's kind of nice to see 5 stars every once in a while. It does something for the confidence that nothing else can. So if you're feeling it, please do. Before we go, we do have a few pieces of listener feedback for you. This first tweet comes from Mariah Lovegood, and she says, I was starting to think all of you were so upset about the Dean's death that you didn't record an episode this week. It's true. We were very upset, Marma especially. But no,
yeah.
While we were upset, Mitch and Karen do apologize. They were distracted by the Super Bowl, which if you watched the Super Bowl or maybe even slept through it, you know how much of an amazing feat it was to be distracted by that Super Bowl. But that's just this girl's opinion. Caitlin, did you want to get that Hypeable comment? Or actually, no, Marima, can you get that Hypeable comment, please?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, I feel really bad because I pronounced your name so incorrectly last time. This is your Kel Tisha, and I know what it's like to have an unpronounceable name, so I feel your pain, and thank you for giving us the phonetics. And she said, I think Marima and Mitch combining on this episode worked quite well. Marima's strong opinions and logical thinking was there to balance out Mitch's wild theorizing, which of course has proven to be accurate in the past. I'm not sure if this is a compliment or not.
I think
have come
it is.
To like I have come to like Marima's strong opinionated stances, though originally I didn't, until I agreed with her on something, and I realized I am the exact same kind of person. I either care too much and ram my opinion down people's throats, or I'm indifferent to something. I don't think I ram my opinion down people's throats. I think I just talk them around until they agree with my opinion.
I agree with shove.
That. I admit that. Yeah.
What, I like talk you around?
Yeah, but I mean, not in a way that forces me to have your opinion. It just, it makes so much sense after a little bit. But I just can't help but join. It's a good thing.
You see? See? It's just my my persuasive skills.
But we know she's wrong about Logan, so it's okay.
Who was right all of season two? That's Marima, not Caitlin, so... I'm just putting that out there. And at the end of this, she also says, what show are you guys doing next? I didn't follow the Firefly podcast, so don't know how much notice you gave. And we will let you guys vote on a list of shows that are kind of options for us very soon. So we'll give you enough time to, like, start watching that and have your say. And, yeah, you guys are going to vote for our next rewatchable show, so that will be fun.
Yeah, I mean, unless another, like, Kickstarter like this pops up, but I don't think that's going to happen. So, yeah, you'll get your say.
Buffy!
I'm sure we'll get a lot of that, too, which I would be down for that. I've never seen it, and I'd rather not be, like, chastised anymore if you're not having seen it.
You've never seen Buffy? Well, then we'll have to rewatch Veronica Mars so you can understand all of Caitlin and my references.
I know!
Since we hijack every episode.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. All right, and Caitlin, would you like to get this last piece of feedback, please?
Sure. This is from Marie. She has a fun fact. She said that Selma Hirsch, the granddaughter of the college's founder, was played by Patty Hearst, who is actually the granddaughter of William Randolph Hearst, who they named the college after. And Tanisha added that she was famous for being kidnapped and developing Stockholm Syndrome towards her captors in 1974, making her presence very relevant.
Wow, that is so weird and cool.
That's so crazy.
And I can't believe she agreed to do it. Like, yeah. It's so cool, but I can't believe they were like, hey, come do this kidnapping storyline that kind of makes fun of you. And she was like, yeah, sure, I'm down for that.
I feel like it is not even, I didn't even think about the fact that it was her storyline that, I don't know, had the Stockholm Syndrome associated with it. Maybe it's because I'm reading the doc and someone put in here, OMG, the prison experiment. But that's interesting that was an overarching story throughout the first crime of the season because we see it with Mercer towards the end. So I think that's interesting, too. We have Stockholm Syndrome all over the place, apparently.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you, Marie and Tanisha. All right, that is everything that we have for you today, all of our opinions thus far. I'm sure we will be giving you more on our next episode. But until then, please go watch the next two episodes, and we'll see you right back here, hopefully this time next week. So until then, I'm Danielle.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Marima.
And have a good week, Marshmallows.
Bye.
Bye.